Beating around the bush.
Beating around?
Around the bush.
Beating.
Beating.
Beating around the bush.
Ward water cuts, cheap fodder, illegal fish trade, protests and mangoes. That's the news stories this week, and this is Beating Around the Bush. Hello and welcome to another episode of Beating Around the Bush. The year is fast disappearing. Welcome, it's December, and we're joined again this week by my phenomenal co-host, Wade Dabnett, all the way from SA. Hi, Wade. How are you today?
Hey, Fleur. How are you? Well, I'm a bit slow today. I went to the test match yesterday, so it's taking a little while to warm up. But what's happening up in Queensland? Where are you?
I'm in Longreach, actually, of all places today. Yeah, I am. I'm on my way home from Cloncurry.
And what was happening in Cloncurry?
Cloncurry, I went up there with Grazy Her magazine. I'm sure a lot of people have heard of Grazy Her. If you haven't, check it out. They did an event up in Cloncurry, Grazy Her Up Late. So had a panel of speakers and all the rest of it hosted by the Sisters of the North up there. And the Sisters of the North are a charity group that are helping people with the flood recovery up there. Everyone would remember those floods that smashed that northern beef industry up there coming on 12 months ago now, 9 months or 10 months ago now. And it was fantastic. I'm moving to Cloncurry, I've decided.
Have you told Kirk yet?
I haven't told Kirk yet. Hope he tunes in on Wednesday to find out. But I really love the community up there. It was so much fun. God, we had a ball. The further north I go, the more at home I feel. But they had this panel of speakers. I won't bang on about this too much, I promise, but I just thought it was worth. We had these speakers, Joy McClymont from Longreach, who has off-the-track training, started this personal training business from their station that's an hour and a half outside of Longreach. And she has now, you know, over 400 clients around the country that she trains from her remote station, which I thought was really cool. She had some great messages. And then
that is cool.
Penny Button. Penny Button is from Muttaburra, and Penny has recently moved to Brisbane. Her son Hugh's taken over the property there. Her husband died in 2006 from heart attack. And she took on the 60,000-acre property by herself and ran it for the last 10, 12 years. And, she's just an absolute legend. God, everyone just hung off every word Penny had. And then the third speaker was Tracy Hayes. And Tracy Hayes has also had some personal tragedies and lost her husband. When she was the president of the Northern Territory Cattlemen's Association during the live export ban.
What a time to be in the chair.
Holy dooly. First female president, just in the role, and then that happens. Talk about thrown into some serious leadership challenges. And she's just put up her hand, actually, to run for the candidacy for the CLP in Northern Territory, challenging the seat of Fanny Bay, which is held by the current chief minister. So another big challenge there for Tracy. And, she was seriously impressive.
That's good. So what's the sort of mood like at Cloncurry after the floods? I mean, they're pretty devastating, and some of the stories that people had to go through, trying to save cattle and hanging out of helicopters and cutting fences.
It was horrendous. It was
a pretty horrific event. So the area's rebounded quite well, you think?
Oh, yeah, I think they've got a long way to go yet until they would consider to be, 100% back on their feet. But a really positive bunch, and the social cohesion up there, I think, is what's going to pull them through. They're all getting back on track. They've gone from flood back into drought. So they really need some follow-up rain and start. There was no sort of – the floods were – so immense, and the water sort of hung around for so long, there was no real pasture response there. So, it was sort of, it was two extremes. Hopefully they get a good follow-up rain this wet season and it gets some restocking and all those sorts of things. An amazing amazing little community there. So that was good fun. Big night. Got back on the road, made it as far as Longreach, and I'm going to hop off the phone to you and get back in the car and do the rest of the, I think it's another 8 hours until I'm back home in Theodore for the week.
Far out.
Very good. Wade, some updates and feedback before we hook into the stories for this week. First one, I really need to know about the lager. How did it go?
It was good. So we had a bit of a tester last week and very happy with it. Crisp, smashable lager, exactly what we were looking for. So we've got a limited edition of cans ready to go for our staff Christmas show in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, really, really good. So you follow us on Longshore Farms on Instagram and you'll be able to probably see a photo of me enjoying it on there.
Smashable lager. You introduced me to that term and I read that. So that's a craft brewing term. I'm just imagining... Does smashable lager mean you just can't stop drinking it? Is that what that?
Yeah, I think it's designed for say farmers who want to drink 20 in one sitting. Is probably what smashable means.
Yep, love it. Sounds like my kind of brew. That's good. So the lager's going. That's fantastic. I'm waiting for my Christmas present to arrive any day. Tell me.
Oh yes.
Tell me the other. Yeah, good. I'm glad you picked that up. Update. Big one that came through, a tweet came through to me just after we sent off last week's episode from a listener that said, and the response was, God, I can just hear Wade now on next week's Beating Around the Bush episode. I laughed so hard. And then I looked at the story and it's more news about this, the GM ban in SA. What's the update there, the quick and dirty?
Yeah, so when we spoke last week, it was actually that Wednesday night that there was a vote going before the upper house that was put up by the Greens to disallow the regulation change that the government had put in to lift the ban on the mainland. So while there's a moratorium tied up in legislation, in the regs, that's where the boundary is set. Okay. And currently it's, the boundary is the whole of South Australia.
Yep.
And so... in order to actually get the moratorium lifted in a pretty quick turnaround so we can grow GM crops last year, the government decided, instead of changing the legislation, to actually just change the regs and leave the ban on Kangaroo Island only.
Okay.
And the Greens, doing what they do, put a disallowance motion up, and so they are ideologically opposed to GM, or at least one of them is, and has been, the constant opposition for this. But the Labor Party, who... we were at that stage, and probably why I didn't raise it last week, we were hopeful that they would not back the Greens' disallowance motion. Mm-hmm. And then there's a couple of other crossbenchers as well in the old Nick Xenophon team that we were hopeful they weren't going to back it, but they did. So it actually means that the lifting of the moratorium through the regs has been blocked. So now the industry and government is back to having a look at how we can try and bring about the change. And how we can get through a parliamentary process that'll mean we can start growing GM crops next year. I think, a lot of people are disappointed. I'm bitterly disappointed about it. As you know, this has been something I've been passionate about for a long time and probably was the reason why I got involved in industry advocacy. But we've actually never been closer. We're so close at getting the Labor Party to turn its position. I mean, its blocking of the ban on process is untenable because when they're in power, they change regulations under ministerial determinations all the time. So the fact is we've won the policy debate in South Australia. It's just now down to winning the politics of the day, which is incredibly frustrating. And the farmers across the state have quite frankly had a gutful of politicians holding us up and telling us what we can and can't grow. And I think what the real slap in the face was that, the SA Best, which is the Nick Xenophon team and Labor, are just arguing about the right way that the government should go about it. So, bitterly disappointing. I would have loved to have said we're home and host and we're into it and I'm already ordering seed and going through our stewardship programs, but we've got a little bit further to ride out yet.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll watch this space on that one. We've got four really interesting stories that have caught our eye this week. The first one... that you pointed out to me, Wade, was up in the Ord. What's making news up there?
Yeah, I thought we've got to talk about water a little bit later, probably in the same track that we have been over a number of episodes with the East Coast and the Murray-Darling Basin. But an article that caught my eye was about the Ord Irrigation Scheme in WA and where I think since 2015, the Ord Irrigation Cooperative has spent 4 years fighting a decision by the Department of Water and Environment that will actually see a reduction in their allocations by 30%. But it's not a reduction because of lack of water. It's a reduction because they just haven't used it. So the allocations that have gone out, I think, are tracking somewhere between 40 and 60% of use. And so the department have sort of come up with this use it or lose it scheme, which I don't know if that's an incentive to try and encourage people to use the water and to develop quicker, which is going to be pretty hard to do if they're going to take water licenses away from them. Yeah. And it was a really good article that actually went through how that Ord irrigation scheme works. Yeah, so it's like 335 gigalitres of water entitlement up there. So we're talking about a considerable amount of water. And you know, I think you and I have spoken about, you know, the cotton expansion up into WA. So, yeah, it was quite an interesting article that went through that. And, yeah, a lot of uncertainty, I think, the fact that it's been going for 4 years on how they're going to develop and grow when they don't know what's going to happen with this water that's going to be reduced and how the department are then going to re-release that. So, yeah, very interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good article. Obviously, links in the show notes to that for people to take a little deep dive into that. But this whole use it or lose it thing, we've got the southern end of the country talking about water use efficiency and trying to, use your water wisely and all the rest of it. The growers up there are obviously just using it, in the best way that they can, and you think that sort of stuff should be rewarded, and it just seems a bit counterintuitive to me. I just think it's a really, really backward step, and if they think that that's going to inspire development, well, I think it's probably going to this sort of four-year battle has to make people a little bit wary about going and investing up there. They'll go and invest up there and on the basis of this allocation and then have, you know, half of it taken away from them. And then how are you going to, you know, invest in infrastructure and things like that too? You know, I don't know. I don't understand. I guess the part that I don't get is why? Are they wanting it to use it elsewhere or are they hoping, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. No, I mean, very interesting. I think, you know, there's obviously no issues with water security up there because it's just an abundance of it. I think it was built in the 70s through the damming of Lake Argyle. They just have an absolute wealth of water where, phenomenal. You know, the expansions that are earmarked aren't going to get anywhere near the allocations that they have. I mean, they said that they were able to save up to 60 gigalitres of water per year by funding significant improvements in the main channel. So that was, I think it was $4 million towards, automated gates that control the flow. Yep. And that gave them a 60 gigalitre saving by just making those adjustments. So it's unbelievable, I think, when we think about what's happening on the East Coast, to that resource that's up there. And you're right, I think they need to have a think about how they're going to get it right because the cotton trials seem to be fairly successful up in Tananara and Catherine this year. So that's probably something that there is real potential for expansion up there.
Yeah, and they're looking at investigating where that first cotton gin would be, and that will be the real turning point, I think, once they get some investment in that, whether it's in Catherine seems to be a likely spot at the moment. Get that cotton gin developed there and then you'll just see the barriers to entry there because at the moment they're trucking cotton back down into central Queensland to be processed.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's massive cut out of the margin. So, yeah, it's exciting.
Surely if the water is basically, not free, but the cost of the water is so minimal versus the cost on the East Coast, that would have to help that freight.
Yeah, definitely.
Differential significantly, I would have thought, yeah.
Yeah, it's the only reason I think they can justify it and do it up to this point. So, I think well, it'll be interesting. The hearing for that, the tribunal that's sort of made the news at the moment, their hearing is in March, I believe. So, so they're doing getting people up there to actually see how it operates, I think will be an important step between now and March. water, you mentioned another water story. This is the one about cheap water for fodder that's been, you know, been announced that David Littleproud's been spruiking this week.
Yeah, so that's an article that you picked up for.
Yeah. And talking about how they're, you know, cheap water for fodder essentially is basically, you know, it's pretty simple. They're saying that you can access a water at a, you know, reasonable rate as long as it's used for fodder to help maintain those, you know, breeding stocks and help people, you know, feed their stock and keep carrying over until this drought breaks. It was talking about, you know, there's a couple of caveats around that, of course. It has to be used for fodder. It can't be fodder as a byproduct, which I'm assuming means you can't grow a crop and bale the stubble. I don't know if that means you can't, you know, produce cotton seed. I'm assuming those sorts of things. I don't know. I've got some questions on that for me when I read the article, and I'm sure there's a lot more detail that they don't get into a short news article, but how are they going to, how would they regulate that? How would they regulate what the water's being used for?
Well, I suppose there's detail that'll come out, isn't it? So we're finally after, I think it was two episodes ago, where we where the government announced that they were, I think, paying South Australia to turn the desal plant on that would then supply 100 gigalitres of water back for this fodder growth. So, you know, growers and dairy farmers can purchase up to 50 megalitre parcels at $100 a meg. So that was really the headline. That's about all we know at this stage. And I think the first 40 gigalitres is available from December the 9th. So I'm pretty sure between now and then we're going to get a good handle on how they are going to regulate it and exactly who's probably likely to take that up. Because, yeah, the one thing we talked about offline was, okay, so if you grow hay... I'm assuming you're just selling that into the market. So, you know, there's no requirement to produce it at a certain price or whatever it may be. So it'll be quite interesting to follow that one through to see whether that is an effective policy.
Yeah.
It's been probably slammed a fair bit, I think, between when it first got announced and now. By everyone bar those that are likely to use it. There's been a lot of noise in that southern Murray-Darling Basin area around water for fodder. And I think people remember Barnaby mentioned it, you know, a couple of years ago, I think, was talking about trying to release environmental water to grow fodder. So now that it's happening, it'll be interesting to track whether it's actually effective.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry.
Oh, I can hear that long trail lager taking its toll, mate.
Yeah.
Okay, and so a little bit of a change of track. A story that caught my eye during the week, Northern Territory fishos have been, two Northern Territory fishermen have been caught with some black jewfish bladders. And I had no idea about this, so I took a bit of a read and a deep dive, but it turns out that the bladder of the jewfish, so not the fillets or anything like that, they're just literally harvesting the bladders for this...
The swim bladder, we should say, or the airbag.
Airbag. Oh, yes, good clarification there. Thank you. The air bladder. For the trade into China, it's used as an aphrodisiac... And it's a delicacy there. They're getting up to $1,000 a kilo for these air bladders. So anyway, that obviously it must be a licensed thing. They do have to tag them and those sorts of things for the trade there. So, but apparently the illegal trade up there is a real problem for the Northern Territory. It's their number one waterway policing issue at the moment.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, very
isn't
cool.
That, isn't that interesting? I mean, out of all the products you think that's an aphrodisiac, I mean, who cut out a swim bladder of a black jewfish and ate it and went, oh, yeah, I'm feeling randy. That's perfect.
Like, I wonder, is it a response to removing the one-child policy? You know, they're trying
to stimulate things. Who knows?
Anyway, it was quite interesting. I thought, oh, there you go. Like, so anyway, it's, and I read a couple of articles. It's been going on for a while. So this article just came out this week. But when I took my little deep dive, there's articles from 2017 and 2016 as well where they're talking about this illegal trade and they're worried about the black jewfish being overfished, I suppose. I actually thought I'd heard along the grapevine about this illegal fish trade, talking to some other keen fishermen about this. And it turns out, so in our local river in the Dawson Valley, the Dawson River, Saratoga is the fish to catch. Great sports fishing, you know, and it. So we all catch Saratoga and throw them back. Turns out one of those fish into the Asian markets live, not, you know, live for aquarium, the aquarium trade, it can fetch up to $40,000 for one fish.
Man.
That's, you know, that's, you wouldn't want to, you know, stuff up the water change or overfeed it or something. You wouldn't want to see that upside down the next morning when you woke up.
Holy moly, why don't people just buy goldfish? They're like $2.
Yes.
So what's a Saratoga look like? How big?
Saratoga, I mean, the ones that are fetching up to that $40,000 are, you know, about 3 foot long. But they, you know, they're a little bit like a barramundi, I suppose, that kind of same family in a bit of a shape.
Can you eat them?
Yeah, you can, but we don't. They're not that, you know, they're not that great. I mean, you can eat them, but we are more about the, they're just great catching. So you just... for sports fish and always throwing them back in for the next round. But they apparently are a really good luck charm over there, a bit like the goldfish and all that sort of stuff in Asia. So, yeah, looks like I've got another business proposal to pitch to the family farm meeting.
Yeah, very interesting. Oh, I look forward to when I finally get up to Theodore to
catch a Sarah.
Wrangling a few Saratogas.
Yeah.
I think we should eat one too, it's like.
Yeah.
Oh, we've got a stinking carp down here.
Oh, yeah. No, well, it's definitely a couple of steps up from that.
That's good.
Yeah, so that was an interesting little one. And then the other one that I found a bit interesting, flicked it over to you, we've had a good chat about it, is the protests in Hong Kong, as, you know, everyone's been reading or seeing the news coverage of that. Hong Kong is now officially in a recession by definition. They've had two back-to-back quarters of contracting economy due to these protests that have been going on. Their tourism numbers have halved, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So reading about all that, but today this article really connected the dots for me about, A, the impact on us in Australia and the impact on agriculture. The mango producers in northern Queensland are getting really worried about all this fruit that's about to hit the market, and do they have a place for it? There's less people, the spending's gone down over there. It's a major market for them, 20% they're working towards, and the tourism numbers are down, so therefore mango consumption is down, and we could see they could really be suffering a bit of a price drop.
Isn't that interesting that when you look at like the Hong Kong process, the furthest thing from your mind is the impact that it's going to have on the mango industry.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. Yeah, it's and I think it's interesting, like we talk about diversity in markets a bit, you know, so it's a hard one for the fruit trade, you know, getting those trade barriers removed, and they've just negotiated these free trade agreements and things to get access to these markets. But, you know, it just shows if you have... not too many eggs in one basket, I suppose. But, you know, if you're relying on a certain country for that trade and something like this happens overnight, the balance on the budget for the season has taken a real turn.
Yeah, and especially those that are, destined or play in that export space, even though it's only 12% of the industry at the moment, but they want to pick it up to
20%.
So it's, but as I know, some growers, might be dedicated to the export market. So it could hit some harder than others. So a very interesting article, Fleur. I think the veggie industry in particular has seen pretty good growth of exports, where really a lot of the horticultural industries have just been reliant on domestic demand for so long.
Yeah.
And so they have been expanding out. And Hong Kong, I wouldn't have thought of Hong Kong as being worth $13 billion annually as an export market when you think it's just really a city. But I suppose it is definitely separate to China, or meant to be anyway. And that's certainly what the protesters are wanting for it to remain. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, and we'll see how much longer. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how much longer these protests go on for, or what's breaking the back there, or how they're going to turn out. But, fingers crossed they sort it out over there shortly.
Yeah, so I think the protests are all about China wanting to extradite citizens to the communist-ruled mainland. Is that right?
Yeah, that's my understanding. I'm certainly not an expert on that one, but that's what I've been taking away from what I've read.
It's interesting. Like, as a farmer, you can, you know, we balance and manage so many different risks, but this geopolitical risk is one that just, you know, it really blindsides you.
Yeah.
You know, pricing and drought and production and all those sort of things, you can have a handle on some of it, but when things like this happen, like we talked a bit about the Trump tariff trade wars and these sort of things, sometimes they come in without notice, and something like a Hong Kong protest for that to have big impact just shows you know, how fragile sometimes markets are and how bloody tough agriculture can be.
Yeah.
We talk about drought a lot, but there's so many other factors that
there's another
that come
thing
to play.
We can't control.
Anyway.
Yeah, and I think
lucky we love it.
Yeah, indeed. Absolutely. That's been an interesting week. Good little diversity in stories there, Wade. I have to tell you, I was when I was in Cloncurry, and while I've been on the road the last week or so, I've bumped into a few people that have been listening to the podcast, which is always very cool to hear.
Yeah.
I had one fellow tell us that he wasn't a massive fan. He thought that we could probably stick it a bit harder to people. We weren't, our opinions weren't strong enough, and he wanted to see a little bit more controversy in our discussions, which I thought about. I was like, oh, that's interesting. Maybe we are. Oh, I don't know. And then the next day met another listener who said to me, the thing they love about the podcast is that it's not opinion. It's not, you know, commentary necessarily like our viewpoint. We're not Andrew Bolt or shock jocks or whatever. It's actually just discussion. discussion about the news, and for people that are busy that haven't had a chance for one reason or another to catch any much news that week, they can just tune in, get up to date with a couple of stories and get on with their day. So that was good for me, because I really feel like that's what certainly what I think we're trying to achieve here, is that it is that discussion and just having a yarn about the news. I certainly don't want to become a commentator or one of those sort of controversial figures. So I don't know about you.
Well, I tend to have a rant from time to time, but that's okay, isn't it? I mean, I've said a number of times, I'm certainly not a journalist.
Mm.
I just read a lot of news and like to have a yarn about it. So I think that's what we'll keep doing. And if people have got anything that they want to suggest or any changes, I've been getting some quite good feedback from my wife in particular, who says... I need to shut up and let Fleur talk more. So hopefully you'll notice some changes there.
Spoken like a true wife, mate. That's good to hear. Hannah's on my side. Excellent. All right, mate. Well, look, have a good week. Anything happening on what's happening on Long Trail Farms? You'll get back there after you've finished indulging yourself at the cricket.
I'm off to the cricket. So we've had a bit of a rain delay with harvest, and the hay is all stacked in the shed, and we've got a few trucks going for domestic. But, so we went to the cricket yesterday and got a function at the cricket today. So the Adelaide Test match is just one of the great events that everyone should put on their bucket list and get to. So I go every year, and it's just sensational. So that's where I'm heading today.
Yeah, good one.
And I sound like crap today, so imagine what I'll sound like tomorrow.
Glad we got in early. Have to go and
get what do you get on for the week?
Look, I'm back in theatre this week, just doing the normal stuff, and we're just really waiting for some rain. The cotton crop that we have got in the ground is starting to flower and look a little bit thirsty, sort of hanging in there. And we just really need a run in the river or some rain from the sky pretty soon to salvage to ensure we sort of hit something with that crop at the end of the season, which I'm sure is a familiar tale for many.
Yep.
Anyway.
All right, Fleur.
Okay,
well,
mate.
Have a good week.
Yep.
And safe travels back to Theodore.
Cheers. All right. Have a soother. Catch you later.
See you.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Beating Around the Bush, the podcast of the Rural Business Collective. We really hope you're enjoying it.
And if you are, we'd love to hear from you. And probably if you don't too, but we're assuming if you do, you've lasted this long.
Jump on and join the Facebook group Beating Around the Bush The link will be in the show notes where we can keep the conversation flowing. And if you can tell us maybe some of the yarns that you're reading about this week.
Alternatively, you can send us an email to podcasts@ruralbusinesscollective.com.au. And of course, it wouldn't be an outro without doing the whole like, share and subscribe thing.
Yeah, so if you can subscribe within your podcast app and give it a review, that'd be really great. And we'd love it if you could do it.
And share it with a friend. We steal people's phones and subscribe them. We don't condone that, but of course, hey, it's an option.